From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report, our supply chain special edition. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Tuck Gleason. Today, we'll drop in on the Illinois Farm Economics Summit, dealing with supply chain bottlenecks and some management decisions that farmers need to make for the 2022 growing season. Agricultural economist Gary Schnitke and Nick Paulson from the University of Illinois took up the topic in early December. We'll start with Nick Paulson. He laid out the GDP, or gross domestic product growth rates, in the United States, pre- and post-pandemic.
Just looking at overall GDP for the U.S., and obviously the huge drop in GDP that we experienced in the first half of 2020 with the COVID pandemic, the big rebound that we saw in the second half of the year, and then the, you know, what would be above recent history averages in the quarters of 2021. So, you know, obviously a 31% drop takes some time to recover back to levels where we were pre-pandemic. We have now, you know, looking at projections for 2021 GDP levels for the U.S., we are kind of back to that pre-COVID trend in terms of where we would think we, you know, we might have been in 2021 even before the pandemic had started, just based on the trend in the 10 years leading up to 2020. So we have seen a rebound and again, a return to kind of the levels of growth in terms of the overall economy that we would have expected prior to the pandemic.
So as one measure of the economic growth in the United States, GDP had rebounded by the beginning of December. Supply chain issues, however, remain the problem, says Paulson.
You know, taking a look at kind of measures of supply chains specifically, one of the indicators is just looking at container activity at ports, specifically at the Port of Long Beach in California. And again, you could kind of eyeball what a trend line would have been from 2010 to 2020. We see the decline. Pretty pronounced decline in 2020 due to the pandemic, but then the jump up again associated with the economic rebound to levels that would be, you know, even higher than where we might have expected prior to COVID. So a lot of activity going on at the ports, and probably more activity than they necessarily would have been prepared for. Again, that trend line leading into 2020. And so definitely some bottleneck issues going on, growth and pretty big changes in supply chains. You know, another general economic indicator is unemployment rates and jobs. Obviously the huge spike in unemployment, short-lived spike in unemployment that we experienced when the pandemic hit in the first quarter, second quarter of 2020. Pretty quick rebound again, continued decline in unemployment rates each month, each quarter since then, back down, you know, well below 5% unemployment rate, which, you know, historically would be viewed as a pretty low unemployment rate, probably what economists might even refer to as full employment. Historically above where we were, you know, just leading into the pandemic, but still at a back to a relatively historic level. The caveat to that is we haven't seen any nominal increase in the number of employees or the number of jobs. So if we look at total number of non-farm employees in the U.S. Going back to 1970, we can see that we're at about 153 million prior to COVID. We had the big drop. We've regained a lot of those jobs, but we're still not even back to that level of employment that we saw prior to COVID. So, you know, that, you know, putting those two pieces of information together, lower unemployment rate, but still fewer jobs than we saw previously. That means that we've got a decline in labor force participation rates that, at least in terms of the data that I've looked at, is, you know, it's not focused on any one ethnic group, or it's not all just females or males. It's pretty across the board in terms of the demographic groups that they look at those that they measure those statistics for.
So to recap parts of Nick Paulson's presentation for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, GDP had returned to levels expected prior to COVID. The inboard containers at the Port of Long Beach was at a record high. That creates some supply chain issues. Unemployment rates were down at record lows, around 5% below, in fact, but not as low as prior to COVID, still record lows. However, the number of available jobs had not recovered completely to the figures that were pre-COVID. And then there's the consumer price index and inflation.
Inflation is the other big broad economic issue that's in the news and on everybody's minds. So it's true that recent inflation has increased, definitely relative to where we were heading into the pandemic. So we have seen a big jump in prices relative to where they were a year ago. That's what these inflation rates represent. And the big question is, are these price increases transitory? Are they temporary or are they permanent? So are these associated with bottleneck issues, supply chain issues that we keep hearing about that are going to be relatively short-lived, you know, depending on how you want to define short-lived, or are these things that are going to persist moderate term, longer term into the future? The other thing to point out is, you know, even though we've got, you know, strong trends in the labor market in terms of people returning to the workforce, lower unemployment, given the inflation rates we're seeing, despite what would be considered, again, by historical standards, strong nominal wage growth in recent months, the price increases we're seeing are outpacing those wage increases. So increase in nominal wages, but probably negative real wage growth when you include the effect of higher prices.
So there is inflation, but are interest rates expected to increase? Nick Paulson took that up as well.
Interest rates are another thing we wanted to just kind of highlight here in the general section. So again, comparing those to some of to the inflation measure of 6%. This is just looking at a specific interest rate, the 10-year constant maturity treasury note. Nominal interest rates are still very low. A lot of speculation about what Fed policy will look like in the coming months, coming quarters, whether those interest rates will start to creep up. But given where we're at right now, low nominal interest rates, relatively high inflation, we're also in, you know, a negative real interest rate environment as well, which is, you know, one measure that there is the inflation protected security rate for the 10-year treasuries being at about negative 1% currently. You know, the other thing to think about for inflation, one thing we can look at is looking at what market expectations are, at least at some future time horizon. So again, currently we're at an inflation rate of just over 6%, but the market expectations over what would be a 10-year time window is what we're looking at here in the series in red, the 10-year break-even rate. The inflation expectations currently in the market are for inflation to be at about 2.5 over that 10-year period on average. Obviously, that implies the market is expecting inflation to come down from that 6% level over some time frame over the next 10 years and to average 2.5% over that time frame. Exactly how quickly and when that will happen is you know, the million-dollar question, so to speak. So, but market expectations are for a reduction in inflation from current levels. And a 2.5% inflation rate would be, you know, higher than what we've experienced on average, at least over the last decade, but, you know, certainly not out of historical ranges in terms of inflation rates that we've seen. So, you know, to summarize the general economic intro here, we do see growth occurring. We do see recovery occurring since the shock of the pandemic in the first half of last year. Labor force has not returned to pre-COVID levels and likely will not in the short term. There are some supply chain bottlenecks that are occurring. I think the likelihood of those being relatively short term is probably higher than the labor issue. Again, inflation has increased, at least in the short term. There is this big question about whether it is temporary or permanent. You know, I suppose if your timeline is long enough, everything is temporary. But the question is are we talking months or years in terms of whether we're going to see that inflation rate come down to some of those longer term expectations? And then finally, I think, inflation will probably have an impact on at least real interest rates. Even if the Fed does make any significant movements on nominal rates in the coming quarters, we're probably, operating in a negative real interest rate environment for the short to medium term.
With that and some of the agricultural economics as a background, Gary Schnitke stepped in with Nick Paulson to talk about ag-specific issues. And the first one was actually labor.
A lot of people are looking for employees, and I don't think that situation is going to change anytime soon. And a lot of people would agree with that. Even before COVID, we were looking at a situation in which the number of younger individuals that would be coming into the workforce was going to be less than those that are leaving. It's sort of that a baby boomer cohort going away and a much smaller number coming on force. And that was going to be a situation that would persist and was made worse by COVID, in that COVID probably hurried up some of the retirements in the older generation. And then for some reason, we can't find some of the workers that used to be there, even among the younger people. Seed is probably the bright spot in this whole thing, in that we're only thinking about an 8 to 10% increase in price, and probably not looking at any shortages along the way, but 8 to 10% increase in price, which is going to be the lower end of what we're looking at as far as price increases for the coming year. And again, we're looking at much higher costs for corn. The cost, non-line costs for producing corn are likely to be up $140, $150 per acre from these earlier levels. Here's what we would say about pesticides. There definitely are supply issues with glyphosate and glufosate, and they will likely continue. Those issues have resulted from their COVID-related shutdowns in China, container issues from moving the base product from China here to the United States, and then Hurricane Ida closing the Bear plant, which has been recently reopened. All of that would suggest we're going to expect large increases in price of both of those chemicals, and those have already happened. And you would also expect to see a large increase in all pesticides, because as the glyphosate and glufosate go up, you would also be expecting their substitutes and complements to go up as well. So that's that shortage of glyphosate and glufosate will lead to demand increases for other chemicals. So you're looking for expect large increases in price, and there's probably nothing that you can do about that.
Not much to do about it, Gary Schnitke told those attending the Illinois Farm Economics Summit webinar in mid-December. However, he did have an opinion.
I would put my 2 cents in here, in that by the time we come to spring, we will most likely have the supply. Given the price increases, there's a very, very large incentive for companies to be able to provide the product to the final consumer. So that supply will likely be there, but you likely need to reevaluate the pesticide programs in light of those large increases, and whatever that means. But it probably means a lower reliance on chemicals, if you can do so.
The price of tractors and parts and equipment has been going up over the last several months as well. However, the 2021 numbers from USDA shows that tractor sales were up 11% in the first 10 months of the year, and the combine sales were up 24%. By the way, Schnitke says Illinois farmers made record capital purchases, equipment and such, in 2020. It's all part of the operational problems farmers are facing now and will continue to face in 2022, says Schnitke.
And then there's nitrogen fertilizer. And this is obviously the big one that has come to the forefront here recently. All fertilizer prices have gone up, but nitrogen have gone up more. Last month, anhydrous ammonia prices in Illinois were $1,343. I believe, I don't know how far, that's a record level for nitrogen. Last time we were close to this was back in September and October in 2008, and that was the financial crisis. All fertilizers have gone up. DAP has gone up, potash have gone up. DAP and potash, you can see here, are also here close to record levels. But probably the most striking one is anhydrous ammonia and the whole nitrogen fertilizer complex. And probably that's the one that will be the most concerning moving into spring.
Again, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Today, we're working through some excerpts from the Supply Chain Issues IFAS, or Illinois Farm Economic Summit, that took place earlier in the month. Gary Schnitke is presenting, and he's about to take up the 2022 corn and soybean budgets.
So we're just going to take you through first a calculation of cost, and I'm going to use 2021 cost and 2022 cost. We're doing this for Central Illinois. 234 and 207 are the requirements. 234 is for 2021. 207 is for 2022.
That 234 and 207 are the pounds of N per acre applied. It's based on the N rate calculator, or MRTN.
And these are based on MRTN. And at these prices last year and this year, MRTN and most decision models will say to lower anhydrous ammonia rates. DAP, potash on both of these are at replacement. So last year, 432 anhydrous ammonia, 428 DAP, 327 potash. We had $94 of fertilizer cost, and that's those three ingredients. I would note that anhydrous ammonia is usually the least expensive form of nitrogen. So if we're putting on 28% or 32% or any of the nitrogen solutions, we're going higher. So our increases were $138 for fertilizer, $60 for soybean fertilizer. So there's what we're looking at as far as terms of increases.
Those are year-over-year increases for fertilizer cost, $138 for corn and $60 for soybeans.
Again, significantly larger increases in corn, in both corn and soybean cost. I want to take you through a budget for 220 bushels corn, 68 bushels soybeans, and using close to the prices now that we have. $5 corn, $12 soybeans. $262 for fertilizer, which is up over $100 from last year. And soybean fertilizer costs are up as well. So we're putting in all of those costs, coming up with non-land cost, coming up with an operator and land return, which is return above revenue less non-land cost. And we see virtually no difference in corn versus soybean return.
That difference is about $3 to $6 an acre.
This has some bearing because some individuals or some farmers are thinking about switching from corn to soybeans, which does have some merit. But right now, prices still point probably in Central Illinois and much of the state for corn to have more of a return than soybeans. So a couple points here. We have above average prices, fall bids built in here. And one of the things that I would suggest doing from now on is looking at those costs pretty closely as we're moving through time, because those changes, any changes in costs likely are going to be reflected in fertilizer costs, will likely be reflected in prices of both corn and soybeans. We have fertilizer prices are at record levels. And right now, again, it's touch and go, whether corn versus soybeans. One of the things, again, that you may be considering doing, if we're going to switch to more soybeans, which again has some merit, if you do it, price the crop, or at least part of that crop, because all these models are suggesting lower prices. So one of the worst things we could do is make that decision in those lower prices.
At this point, I might remind you that something Daryl Good taught me a very, very long time ago was that if price causes you to make a decision, then it's probably best to cover that cost by making some sales. And that's what Gary Schnitke is saying. If the price of fertilizer caused you to make a decision about which crop to plant, then it's probably a good idea to sell some of that crop for the 2022 growing season. He was also suggesting that the price of anhydrous ammonia, particularly as a high price, is related to corn, and if it were to drop back, there might very well be a correlation in the price of corn. He went through that as an example during the Illinois Farm Economic Summit.
We have a little model where we relate anhydrous ammonia price to corn prices, and we do this in with three items: lagged ammonia price, corn price, and natural gas price. Corn price is the national corn price, and the natural gas price is the Henry Hub price. This model will explain well ammonia prices up to last month, November 2021, and corn price has a larger role in ammonia price, and it's more important than natural gas. If you're looking at what causes corn anhydrous prices to move, it's more influenced by corn price than natural gas price. And in November 2021, our actual price is overpredicted. And let me just show you that. So this predicted model comes in close to the actual, and then this is last month. And all of a sudden, we're over $400. Our actual price is $400 over our predicted. And let's just go in and zoom in on that. So it's actually $435 in November. Last month. So the takeaway from that is, up until this point, anhydrous ammonia prices were well in line with what we would expect fundamental factors to be. And then November, things went out of whack.
Out of whack to the tune of about $400 per ton premium. It's the reason that Gary Schnitke says it might be worth waiting to make some purchases of 2022 anhydrous ammonia needs, and also to make some sales of both corn and soybeans ahead of time. Gary Schnitke and Nick Paulson made their presentation during the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report.